Good evening, everyone. My name is Maureen O'Hagan. I was hired by the developer to hand manage the distribution of the affordable units for Prentice Place in Grafton. Tonight, we're going to talk about the project briefly, the eligibility criteria, and the documents you need to provide in order to have the opportunity to lease. Jennifer Michalik is on the line. She is the property manager. So she can answer any specific questions you have about the property. All right. So, Jen, do you want to start with the property information? Okay.
Absolutely. Hello. So Prentice Place is in North Grafton, and we're in this great little corner of the world, about 1 mile to the new Market Basket Plaza on Route 20 in Shrewsbury. And we have this beautiful location right off of 140 by Nelson Park. So there's a lot of greenscape there. In this community is only 40 apartment homes, so it's three buildings, a 12 and a 14 unit building. So it's very quaint, and again super convenient to everything in Grafton. There's a Stop and Shop right down the road, a brand new CVS, so it's a super location, and it's like 10 minutes to UMass Memorial Hospital in Worcester. Again, super convenient. Pike's right there. The apartments themselves, the developer has been building single family and condominiums for years and years and years and years. So the finishes in these apartments are a lot nicer than what you typically see in sort of like a big box apartment community. If you follow us on Facebook, you can see some progress photos of how things are kind of coming along. By the end of this month, sort of like the pretty finishes will be in. They won't be ready for occupancy, but flooring is currently in, cabinets are in. They were actually installing granite the past 2 days. So they're beautiful white cabinetry. Some of them have some like pretty substantial kitchens, big peninsulas and islands, and then black granite, tile backsplash, tiled showers. In the bathrooms. We have a couple of different floor plans available as well. We will have some community amenities. We will have a fitness center and a resident lounge as well, with free Wi-Fi. There's plenty of parking. Certainly, if anyone has any specific questions, I'd be more than happy to try to answer them for you if they're related to, the apartments or the location. And then Maureen, of course, is the guru for all things affordable program related.
And this is a pet-friendly property, Jennifer? No pets? No,
Good question.
pet-friendly.
Yes,
So, yeah.
we are pet friendly, but smoke free.
Yeah. And are there any restrictions on the size of pets?
Not on size, but we do have breed restrictions.
Breed restrictions. Okay. And there are 10 units available. Nine are two bedrooms and one three bedroom. Are you still on target, Jen? We have the first building was going to be ready in December. No, one building is ready
No.
already. Then the next building in December and then June. Have
We're
those
not
dates
on
changed?
target.
Okay. So where are you for the first building?
So February.
February? Okay. And then the other one in December is pushed out to April.
Probably be a little
No.
bit further out than that.
Okay.
I would say May, June.
And then the June 23, what, more towards the fall of
Yeah,
23?
I think we're going to be close to 6 months apart.
Right. Well, that's good to know. Good to know for us in the office too when people ask. All right, anything else? An in-unit washer and dryer.
Yes.
Yeah. Is it stackable or side by side?
It depends on the unit.
Okay.
Side by side where we could do it, like in the three bedroom, most of them have stackable.
Okay.
But there's no carpeting in any of these apartments. It's LVT just throughout, which is nice and somewhat unique. You don't see that usually.
Oh, no, you don't. Because usually the bedrooms are carpeted if nothing else is.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
This
that's
is nice. Easy to take care of. It's a nice clean look.
And the heat is what?
Everything at the community is electric. Everything's high efficiency, all the appliances, all the HVAC. There's no gas on the property. So residents pay the electric bill and then the water sewer bill on a quarterly basis.
Okay.
And I just want to quickly introduce Austin. Austin's actually the community manager at Prentice Place. So if anyone's interested in taking a tour, again, we're a work in progress, but there's definitely some pretty things to see at this point. So you can always make an appointment with Austin to, you know, take a stroll through.
Jen, I have a question in the chat. Hang on, let me open the chat. If I have a service dog and it's in the dog restriction, is the animal still accepted because she's a service dog?
So again, it depends on if the breed is a restricted breed. Our restricted breed list comes from our insurance company. So right. We would have an issue insuring the property if it was on their and our list, which creates obviously a problem. We have a mortgage. So the hard answer is if it was on the restricted breed list, even though it is a service animal, it would not be permissible.
Okay. All right. Does anyone else have any questions for Jen? She's going to hang around a bit, but I just want to make sure anything's answered. It's a German Shepherd.
Unfortunately, yes.
It's restricted.
Unfortunately, yes.
So the German Shepherd is restricted. Okay. All right. So tonight's meeting is being recorded. So if you wind up having questions that you don't want to ask for it to be recorded, let me know. I will turn the recording off and then turn it back on when I've addressed your questions. Okay. So, all right. So we've gone over the units. The units are not income-based. So Section 8 is accepted. But the rents that you're responsible for paying are the rents as stated in the application. So for a two bedroom, the rent is $1,695. And in order to qualify for that, if you do not have a Section 8 voucher, is $50,850. If you have a Section 8 voucher, the minimum income does not apply. The rent for the three bedroom, of which there is only one, is $1,926, and the minimum income for that without a Section 8 voucher is $57,780. Now, when we look at your minimum income, obviously we look at your income, but we can take, or we may be able to take, your assets under consideration if you don't meet the minimum income, and that would depend on how much in assets you have. Meaning, can you dip into that on a monthly basis to continue paying the rent? And we tend to look at 2 years of assets to cover the rents, so you don't have to move and there's not as much turnover. But the rents are not income-based, so you need to keep that in mind. So in order to qualify for the lottery, you need to submit a complete application. The complete application starts on page 8, probably. Page 14. I'm going to spend a good portion of the time at the end of this meeting going over all the documentation you need to provide. This is a little more intensive based on who the project administrator is, which has nothing to do with the developer. They require a few more forms than is normally needed for affordable housing. So I do want to go over everything with you so you understand all the forms to be provided. So if you submit a complete application and you are determined eligible, you will receive a lottery code, which is what will be announced during the lottery. If you submit an incomplete application, you will not be included in the lottery, but you certainly will have the opportunity to provide the missing documentation. Assuming units remain after the lottery, we would plug you in at that point in time.
So far, we've only received about 4 applications. We're about three weeks out from the deadline. So we certainly will receive more applications. But for right now, we've only had 4. So if you submit the application without, I would say you probably have a good opportunity to lease. These are 2 and 3 bedroom units. So they will be rented to households that require 2 or 3 bedrooms. So if you're a single person household or a married couple without any children, we are not going to be able to lease any of these units to you unless there's a special accommodation. Unfortunately, by the guidelines we work under, we can't overhouse people. And if you require a 1-bedroom unit, you would be considered overhoused. So we're not able to do that. Tonight is the public information meeting. The application deadline is December 30th. Your application needs to be postmarked on or before December 30th. I would tell you, if you're going to mail it close to that deadline, I would suggest you walk it into the post office and make sure they date stamp it. If you don't, then there's a good opportunity. It'll just be sent to central sorting. And some mail that comes out of central sorting is not date stamped. It just kind of has a barcode on it. And we would not know when that was mailed. So if we received it after the deadline with a barcode, it would be determined late. But if we receive it after the deadline with a December 30th postmark, you're fine. We will review your application and include you in the lottery if you're eligible. The lottery is scheduled for Friday, January 27th. Depending on the number of applications we receive, we may be able to move that up, which is what we'd like to do. So if you need to give notice to any of your current landlords, you will have plenty of time to do that in order to move in when this building's ready. So we will do our best to get it done early, if possible. The lottery will also be taking place on Zoom. This meeting, as you know, is being recorded. We will post this meeting on our website as well. So if there's anything you want to listen to again, you will be able to do that. So the eligibility criteria for renting an affordable apartment in Massachusetts, it's all the same. The only thing that's going to change is income limits, depending on where the property is located. But one is based on income. It's gross income from all household members 18 years of age or older. If you are a one-person household, is $61,900. Two-person household, the gross income is $70,750. Three-person household, $79,600. Four-person household, $88,400, $95,500, and $102,550. Those are the maximum income limits you can earn, and those income limits are based on your household size. So if you are a parent with 2 children, you're a 3-person household, even if your kids do not earn any money. Assets, there is no asset limit for affordable housing. Rentals, homeownership there is, but we do take your assets under consideration. If you have $5,000 or less in assets, we will look at the interest or dividends earned from that money, and it is added to your income in determining eligibility. If your assets are $5,000 or over, we will look at the actual interest and dividends earned, and we will also look at the total value of your assets. Multiply that total value by 0.06%, and whichever is greater, the interest or dividends or the 0.06% of your assets, will be added to your income in determining eligibility. I've been doing this for many, many years. I've never disqualified someone based on the assets being added to their income. So it's a small amount. 0.06% is like 6 cents on a dollar or less than that. So it's really, really inexpensive. Assets divested at less than full market value within 2 years of application will be counted at full market value in determining your eligibility. The lottery is providing you with an opportunity to lease an apartment. So what will happen, you'll participate in the lottery, we'll approve you, we'll send you to the leasing office. You need to go through the leasing office screening. If they approve you, then we need to send your information to a third party, it's called Spectrum, and they have final say on your eligibility. So once we get your spectrum approval, then you'll be offered a lease to sign. So there's an extra step in this process as well, in getting your final eligibility in place. But if we approve you based on the income and assets you provided to us, then I don't expect that there'll be any issue getting you approved through Spectrum. It's just a matter of time. And I'll just tell you up front, Spectrum is very by the book. So every I has to be dotted and T's crossed. So, you know, we may have to come back for you to get paperwork filled out correctly. I don't know. And I won't know what to tell you until we start reviewing applications, but understand that they are very picky and we have to be the same in order to get you approved. So I don't want to put anybody off by the process. We do most of the work, but we may have to come back to you for additional documentation where in a project that doesn't use this particular project administrator, we may not have to do. But I just want to let you know that. Full-time college students renting an apartment on their own are not eligible for an affordable apartment. You need to be have finished school 5 months in the calendar year. You cannot have been in school. So if you're graduating in May, you would be able to rent an apartment in December. So we're not able to rent while you're a college student or until you're 5 months graduated or finished classes if you don't finish school. If you own a home in this with this particular project administrator, you can own a home and rent an affordable apartment. That home, the equity obviously is going to count in determining your assets, and then what we have to add to the to your income in determining eligibility. But unlike other rental programs we work with, you can own a home in this instance. All right, 7 of the 10 units are available for local preference. So if you live in the town of Grafton, work in the town of Grafton, or for the town of Grafton, which includes the Grafton school system, if you have an offer of employment, a bona fide offer of employment for a company located in the town of Grafton, or you have children attending the Grafton school system, any one of those criteria will put you in the local pool. The benefit of the local pool is you will have 2 opportunities for a unit. You will be included in both the local pool and the open pool. If you are not local, you will have 1 opportunity in the open pool only. Local pool applicants will select their unit first, and then the open pool will select from whatever units are remaining. So there is 1 2-bedroom and 1 3-bedroom unit, our group 2 units, which are handicap accessible. Jen, can you talk about those? The handicap accessible units?
Trying to figure out how to unmute myself. Yes.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
So they are going to be in our first building. We do have 1 of the affordable units that meets that criteria. So that would have a walk-in shower in the master, and then it would also have a slightly different package of appliances. So it would have side-by-side laundry, as well as some differences in the kitchen, with the microwave instead of being installed higher, it would be a countertop level. And the specs specifically on the handicap appliances, like the range is a little bit different than it is in, the traditional apartments. But we do have the specs on those. So if someone was, interested in that, we could certainly share with you, that appliance package. So you can see specifically what's going to be installed.
Okay, and there's an elevator in the building, correct?
There is not.
No elevators in the building.
There's not.
All right. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
If you require a reasonable accommodation, you need to provide that letter from a doctor typically as part of your application. Yeah, if you don't provide it with your application, then we're not going to be able, we may, I mean, depends on the number of applications we get, but we may not be able to accommodate your request. If you do require one of the wheelchair accessible apartments, the group two units, you automatically go to the top of the list and have priority for those units. So just let us know if you do need that unit. So unit preferences are based on the following. There's a husband and wife or those in a similar living arrangement must share a bedroom. And there's at least one person per bedroom thereafter. So if you are a husband and wife, and for whatever reason are unable to share a bedroom because it would impact your mental or physical health, that's where you would want to provide a special accommodation letter from your doctor explaining that in your household, you require separate bedrooms. Okay, that tends to be where I see the special accommodations. If you are pregnant, that unborn child is considered a household member. So you would need to provide proof of the pregnancy, which would be a letter from your doctor with your application. And if you are in the process of a divorce or separation, you must provide proof that it started or been finalized with your application. If you are unable to do that too soon in the process, then your soon to be ex's income and assets and homeownership, if it applies, will be taken under consideration in determining your eligibility, even if that person will not be living with you in the unit. All right. So if you are separated or divorced and have the paperwork, you need to send that in with the application. If not, you need to, your spouse's or partner's information needs to be provided. 28.2% of the local pool applicants need to be minority. If we do not meet that number with the approved applicants, we will do a mini lottery first on the, whenever I said the lottery was, January or something. And we will move the appropriate number of non-local applicants from the open pool, minority applicants from the open pool into the local pool. So those originally open pool applicants would then be considered local and would have two opportunities for a unit. And that is until we equal the 22.2% of the local pool. On an annual basis, you need to be recertified for continued eligibility. So all the paperwork you provide for the initial application, you do need to provide on an annual basis. The difference is you're eligible at 80% of median income for the initial lease up. And then on an annual basis thereafter, you're eligible for earning up to 140% of the median income. So for example, give me a second. For, let's just go a three-person household, the income limit is 79,600 times. So at recertification, you could earn up to $111,440 before you're considered ineligible for an affordable apartment. If you were considered ineligible, you would have the opportunity to rent that unit and pay market rent or move out. That would be your choice. And you would discuss that with the leasing office. All right, any questions so far? Nope. Okay. So next I'm going to talk about the lottery process. So we've talked about, we have 10 units, seven in the local pool, three in the open pool. Everyone who has been determined eligible for the lottery will receive a lottery code. It's usually a combination of letters in your name. And that is what we call out during the lottery. We do not call out your name to protect your privacy. We will have two pools. We'll draw the local pool first. Then we will draw the open pool. I don't break it out at that point based on two bedroom or three bedrooms. I will do that post lottery. But the important thing to remember is the highest ranked applicants in the lottery for a two bedroom unit will have the opportunity for a two bedroom unit. So if we have one person house or single people or couples apply and they come in first and second, we're going to move to the third person on the list if they require a two bedroom and they move to the top of the list. I've already explained where we cannot rent apartments to one bedroom households. I expect they will apply, but the two bedroom households will have priority for two bedrooms, and the highest ranked applicant in the local pool for a three bedroom unit will have priority no matter where you are on the list. You could be last, be the only three bedroom applicant in the local pool, and you will have the first opportunity for that unit. Okay. If we exhaust the two bedroom applicants in the local pool, we've offered a unit to all of them and we still have local pool units remaining, then we will fill those units from the open pool. The local pool only applies to the lottery. Moving forward, you know, no one is designated local or non-local. So we will move to the open pool to fill those local pool units. We do not hold them for future local pool applicants that may apply. So our goal obviously is to fill the units and hopefully be able to offer everyone a unit that applies in the lottery. I've already explained that how it will work post-lottery. Post-lottery, after the lottery, I will email you the lottery list as drawn. And part of that email will be a second attachment, which will have broken out the units in the order to select. So I'll break it out by two bedroom households for the local pool, three bedroom households for the local pool, and for the open pool as well. So you'll know exactly where you are on that list to have an opportunity to lease. Those who do have the opportunity, you will receive a second email from me, just reviewing again what the process is moving forward, okay? But we will move as quickly as we can for the units that are available in February. If you want to wait for a unit that's going to be available later, that's your decision. What do we got? May and June, and then in the fall. At that point, we will reserve a unit for you, but we won't move forward with your approval process for Spectrum because it will be outdated. And I'll talk to Jen to see if it's something in Austin to see if they want you to go through the leasing office screening and get that out of the way. I don't know what their timing is, but we will not be able to send your information to Spectrum until the units are May, June, until early April. Because it would be over 6 months old. I'm sorry, 60 days old, and it's expired. So we will reserve a unit for you, but we will hold off on getting that approval until after that point in time. So you would still need to be eligible at that time we contacted you to update your information at the 80% limit. And then I'll talk with Jen and Austin to see if they want you to go through the leasing office screening first, or if they want to hold off on that as well until we're closer to the occupancy date. But I don't, they're behind now. Everybody's behind these days. So I will keep in close contact with the leasing office to make sure, they're still on target for the May, June. If that's delayed more, we'll keep you in the loop and keep you posted as far as when availability is going to happen. Okay. All right. If you have a Section 8 voucher, once you get approved through us, you get approved through the leasing office, you get approved through Spectrum, then you need to be approved by Section 8. Section 8 typically, they're not going to say no, trust me, but they will come in. There's a bunch of paperwork the leasing office and Section 8 will need to do. I think they come out and do an inspection on the property. I think the rent is fine. But it's just an additional step Section 8 tenants have to go through before you can move in. So there could be a delay of 30 days or so before a Section 8 tenant is able to move in. All right. We've talked about when the units will be available. You certainly have the opportunity to take a later unit if you want. No one's going to force you to take a unit that's going to be available in February. Obviously, we want to fill those units first. But if your lease schedule is such that the May or June unit is better, then we'll just reserve that unit for you. All right. So the floor plans are here. I don't know if you're looking at the application on page 7. So we've identified the floor plans with the unit numbers. So you can look at the layout of the plans for each of the buildings. and each of the floors. Building one and three are the same. Building two has their own set of floor plans. So you have all that. And now I'm going to get ready to talk about the what you have to provide for the application to be complete. All right. First thing I want to tell you is more than 50% of the applications we receive for any lottery, whether it's homeownership or rental, are incomplete. So, and that means you're not going to be included in the lottery. It happens all the time. People don't pay attention to the application. It's submitted, it's incomplete. They get mad at us, and it's just the way it is. And this, as I've already said, with this particular project administrator, as nice of people as they are, it is a more complicated approval on our end. So we do need to dot the I's and cross the T's. This list that I'm reading from where it says, please read carefully on page 12, I kind of put that together and update it as necessary because I try to point out where people make their errors in completing the applications to kind of give you tips on what to look for. So one thing you need to look for, and I'm going to go over it in detail, but there's notes on some of the required identification verification document. So you really want to pay attention to those notes when you're gathering your information. Failure to do that, and it could be the difference between being eligible or ineligible. And an incomplete application and a complete application. Where most of it occurs is with the checking accounts and savings accounts. And so I'm going to talk about that in a little more detail, but it's really it definitely can be the difference between eligible and ineligible, but we'll go into details when we get there. Again, all financial documentation is required from household adults 18 years of age or older. Doesn't matter if your child is a full-time college student, we still need that information. If they are a full-time college student, and they are dependent on your tax return, and they're working, we will only count $480 of their income towards the income eligibility. Only 480. They could be earning 30 grand a year. We're only going to count $480 if they are a full-time student and a dependent on your tax return. If they are a full-time student or a part-time student and they are not a dependent on your tax return, their full income will count towards the income project income eligibility. So that's why we need all the paperwork from 18-year-olds, even if they're full-time students. Do not assume that you don't need to provide a specific document. When in doubt, call or provide it. If we don't need it, we'll shred it. But don't assume you don't need to provide it because you may have assumed incorrectly. If you have a Robinhood statement or any other online investment accounts, you do need to provide the last statement for each of those. I've had people that didn't provide it and they tell me, well, it only had $5 in it. So I didn't think you needed it. Well, you know it has $5 in it. But for all we know, it has 500,000. So unless we receive a copy of the statement, we are not going to know what the value of that account is. Even if it's zero, if you have an open account, you've got to provide the statements. If you're unable, you've tried to provide specific documentation and you're unable to provide it, then let us know in writing. If we can work with you, we will. But if you don't mention it, that you've tried to get it and you couldn't, we don't know that. And we're going to go through your application and see something that's missing and you're not going to be included in the lottery. But, you know, if we can work with you, we absolutely will do that. Our job is not to disqualify people. Our job is to qualify each and every applicant for a lottery so they have an opportunity for an apartment. It doesn't happen that way a lot, but that's what our intent is to do. So we work with you as much as we're able, but you've got to inform us if there's difficulty in your situation for providing documentation. Do not take photos with your cell phone and attach them to an email and send them to us. We will not print them out. We will not, we'll open the email. We will not print them out. you need to scan. If you're going to email your application to us, you need to scan and attach them to an email. Photos, we don't look at. A lot of times they're not legible. They're blurry. They're out of focus, same thing. They're crooked. We just can't use them. So please do not do that. And we also do not recommend that you fax the information. A lot of times all the fax pages don't come through. And that's on you, not on us. So we prefer you to mail your application. We will accept emailed applications. All right. So the next section is kind of in two phases. One is the required documentation from page 13 to 25, and pages 27 to 34 are documents that you only need to complete if they are applicable to you. So if they don't apply, you don't need to provide them. So we have a checkoff sheet on page 13 that I would suggest you pay attention. When you submit your documentation to us, please submit it only single-sided. No double-sided documents would be most appreciated. All right, so page 14 is really your basic contact information. If you're a local preference, this is where you check it off. Again, you only need to meet one of the local preference criteria. If you have a Section 8 voucher, check yes. Check your bedroom size. If you put down 3 bedrooms and you're only a 2-bedroom household, they're only going to offer you a 2-bedroom unit, but you can check your size. Your preference for when you'd like to move in. Obviously, dates have all changed or estimates. If you're disabled, let us know. If you require a special accommodation, let us know. I didn't put here if you require a wheelchair accessible unit. So if you do, just write that in and we'll make sure that one of those units are yours. So we need to know the total number of household members living in the unit. And then we also need to know the name of each member, their relationship to you, and their age. Okay. And on that list, under the household composition list, you want to include your name as the applicant as well. And then we ask for a breakdown of your income. It's your gross monthly income for you and any co-applicants in the house. If it's not accurate, don't lose sleep over it because you're going to provide all the backup documentation, but it gives us a sense of what you have when we start the review of your application. Same with the household assets. We ask that you provide the current balances. Again, don't worry about it if it's not 100% exact because you're going to provide the backup documentation as well. If you're working, if you provide your employer, you can provide a separate sheet if you have more than one employer in the home, depending on how many people are working. So that would be appreciated. And then about your household, this is where we get the information on someone's minority status. This section is purely optional to complete. You don't have to, but if you meet one of the categories that are listed, it is to your advantage to complete it. If you're local and even if you're non-local, because again, if you're a non-local minority applicant and we need to add to the local pool to meet the 28.2% of minority applicants, you may have the opportunity for 2 opportunities for a unit. And the local pool, again, selects their unit first before the open pool. And that really only applies to the first go around because as we start plugging in new people, they'll have to select from what's left. All right, we ask you to sign and date that, everyone. Page 16 is the affidavit and disclosure form. You need to read, sign, and date that. The signature page is page 17. And so the next form on this is the household eligibility questionnaire, which I admit is a pain in the neck to fill out, but this is one of the forms that is specific to this project administrator. So everybody who applies has to complete this form in its entirety. So it's pretty simple as far as what they're asking. I'm just going to give you a couple heads up on what not to do. You need to provide every household name, their relationship to the head of household, their date of birth, and the last four digits of their social security number. If you are a student or any of them are a full-time student, you need to let us know yes or no. Any household changes in the next 12 months, yes or no. Any student changes are expected in the next 12 months, yes or no. Now this portion on the bottom, the student status, the first question says, is every member of the household a full-time student? If they are not, all you need to do is check no, and then move on to the next page. So you don't have to answer the rest of those questions. All right. Now on the next page, the next two pages, one is household income. There's 35 categories of household income for both head of household, co-head, or any other member. If you have more than two household members that are 18 years of age or older, feel free to make a copy because they will have to complete this as well. So you need to just go down here, check yes or no if it applies. You cannot, if your only source of income is salary from a job, and the number one, and you check yes, you can't run a line through the rest of them. You have to check no for each one. Don't ask me why, but you have to check no, because the Spectrum will deny the form. I've had it happen. So if you do submit with a line just going through all the no's, we will have to ask you to redo the form, okay? That's the same as it is for the household assets. Now, you can't use whiteout on this form. You can't cross anything out on this form, all right? So please take your time when you're filling it out. Again, it's not difficult to fill out. You just gotta be careful and read everything. But Spectrum will kick a form back if there's whiteout, and they'll kick the form back if there's things are crossed out. Okay, so please just make sure of that. The asset page is the same thing, yes, no. And then everyone in your household size has to, and your household over 18 or over older need to sign the form. We will sign it as well. We're the management signature, so we will sign that as well before it's submitted to Spectrum. Everyone, I'm on page 22, every applicant needs to complete the student status affidavit, even if there are no students in the household. Don't ask me why, makes no sense, but you all have to complete that even if there are no students in the household. Okay, so it has to be completed by everybody. And we just found out that there's another form that they are now requiring everyone to complete, which is not part of this packet. So if you have the opportunity, at least we'll have to send you that form to fill out separately. So the next page is the release of information authorization form. You do need to sign that and provide the information as requested. We use this if we have to, for example, do an employment verification on you. We need to submit this form to your company. So we do need this completed. All right, so I'm going to spend most of the rest of the time on the required personal identification and income verification documents. I want to explain why you need to provide them, how we use them, so you understand how this process is going to work. One obvious, if you have a Section 8 voucher, you must provide a valid copy with your application. Checking yes that you have a voucher and not providing a voucher will be a no in determining your eligibility. So if you have a voucher, you must provide it. If you meet one of the local preference criteria, you need to provide documented proof. If you live in town, you need to provide copies of utility bills, copy of a valid lease. That's absolutely fine. If you're working for the town, we'll know that based on pay stubs. School system will know that based on pay stubs. If you work for a company located in the town of Grafton, then we will check the pay stub to see if it says Grafton. If it does not, then you really want to provide a letter from your company. And trust me, we will verify that letter. So don't just write a letter thinking, oh, we'll just automatically approve it. That's not the case. You need to provide identification for all household members, birth certificate, driver's license, passport. Please do not send your social security cards. I don't want them. But birth certificate, driver's license would be acceptable. If you require reasonable accommodation, this is, again, we've discussed it. You need to provide that request at time of application. So you need to provide a doctor letter, a letter from your doctor or other documentation regarding the reasonable accommodation. All right. So we need your last five pay stubs. Not three, we need five. Doesn't matter if you paid weekly, monthly, bi-weekly, we need five pay stubs. People will send us three and say it covers 6 weeks. That's not what we're asking. We're asking for your last five pay stubs. Now, we determine your income three ways. One, we look at the gross pay on each paycheck. We average it out and then multiply by the number of pay periods you have. And that's one way. The second way is we'll look at the year to date. We will divide the year to date by the number of weeks in the year. And we get that number from a website. And then we will multiply that by 52. Whichever is greater is the dollar amount we will use in determining your income eligibility. We will also look at your W-2s from the previous year. So if they are higher than, you know, the highest we've determined, we're going to ask you why. And usually there's a very good reason for it. So we're just going to ask you why, but we will take the higher of each of them. A lot of people work overtime. A lot of people get bonuses or commissions. If we determine your over income, then we'll go back and look a little more closely at your pay stub, meaning where it's all coming from. If you have a ton of overtime or bonuses, what we'll do is we'll kind of break out those from the year to date and figure that amount separately. And sometimes we can get it to work for you that way if we break it out separately. So we do try to make it work. We're not always successful, but we do try to look at your pay stubs different ways to see if we can get you eligible. The other information we get from your pay stubs, we will know if you have a retirement account. We will know, usually most pay stubs these days are direct deposit. So, and they provide the last four digits of your bank account numbers, the last four digits. So when we go to review your bank statements, we automatically check and match the account numbers from your pay stubs to the account numbers on your bank statements. So I mentioned this because some people, you know, drop 25, 50, 75, excuse me, a month into an emergency fund or a savings account and just forget about it. They really just forget they have that account. We won't, because we'll see it on your paycheck. So you want to just take a look at the accounts that are listed on your paycheck to make sure all are included with the application. If you've obtained a new job in the last 12 months, so anytime in 2022, you want to provide a copy of your offer letter. And then if you are no longer working for an employer you worked for in the last 12 months, we need a copy of the separation letter, all right, which will provide your last day of employment with that company. So you do need to provide that information. Okay, if you do not have any income, there is an, or you're unemployed, there's an unemployed status affidavit and a certificate of zero income form that you need to complete. And we'll go over those. Now, if you get unemployment or you're getting disability, workers' comp, severance pay, that's all fine. You need to provide the documentation to show us what the monthly, weekly, biweekly, however often you're paid, gross amount is. So if you're receiving unemployment, you know, you can go online and print out some DOR documents that will show the pay history that you've earned over the, how long you've earned it. It'll tell us how much, what's the gross amount you can earn, and more importantly, when your unemployment ends. All right, so we need that documentation. And regarding the remaining disability, workers' comp, severance pay, I am certain you have a letter that's telling you how much you're earning per check. What's important for us to know if you have disability or workers' comp, when you're going back to work? Is it short-term disability, long-term disability? When you're going back to work? Are you going back at full time, full pay? The date you're going back to work? Because more than likely you earn more when you're working than you do on workers' comp or disability. And we certainly want to maximize your income. So if you're going back to work, say in 4 months, you know, it would be helpful to know how much you're earning, because that means you're going to show a higher income usually. So we want to make sure we capture that to make sure you're eligible. Now, you can say, you can see in my bank accounts, my disability or workers' comp or unemployment. And you are correct. We may be able to identify that information in your bank account. But what you need to remember is your eligibility is based on gross income. And we are not going to know from looking at your bank statements if the deposits are gross or net, which is why you need to provide the backup documentation for all sources of income, because we base your income on gross. Same if you're receiving Social Security, annuities, retirement, pension, disability, death benefits, or any other types of periodic receipts, we need the letter that tells us how much you're getting. Social Security, the 2023 letters are due out pretty soon, if you haven't gotten it already. So we need that. If you haven't received your 2023 benefit letter, send us your 2022. We know what the cost of living increase will be this year, so we'll do the math ourselves. But you need to provide the documentation for each source of income. If you're unemployed again, you need to fill out the unemployment status affidavit, which we'll get to in a minute. If you receive child support or alimony, if your child support you're getting through the Department of Revenue, the DOR, again, we will see that deposited in your bank account. But what we need from you is there's two reports, my word, not theirs. One is that tells us how much you're supposed to get, whether it's monthly, semi-monthly, bi-weekly, or weekly. The form tells us you're due to get $100 a week or $300 a month or whatever. So we need that form. That report will also tell us if there's any back child pay that's owed you, and if any of the child support you received for that last pay period was any back child support money as well. And then the second report we need is your child support pay history for the last 12 months. So a lot of times you may be court ordered to receive X dollar amount, but they're giving you less. So we don't want to consistently less, which is why we get the pay history. So we're not going to give you the gross amount you've been awarded. We're going to go through that pay history and see how much you get every month, and then see what the average, and we'll count that. If you get more than you're supposed to get, great. That should work to your benefit. So we do need that. If you, there is a form that we have attached, the custody and child support affidavit. If you have children, you need to complete that form for each child. And if you do not receive child support, you need to complete that form as well, because there's a section on that form that says, no, I do not receive child support. Okay, so you absolutely, with children involved, that form must be completed. All right, if you are self-employed, you need to provide a detailed expense and income statement. Typically that, if you have an accounting software, you can print out a report from January through November. It could be through December, depending on when you apply, which shows us your income and expenses on a monthly basis. so we know what your net income is. Unlike people who get W-2s, we look at your gross income in that regard. When you're self-employed, we're looking at your net income because you pay taxes on the income that's left after all expenses are deducted. All right, so that's why we need that spreadsheet. You can use it in Excel. There's a sample Excel spreadsheet on our website under the links tab that you're welcome to print out or say copy and save and fill it in for all sources of income. Uber, Lyft, Instacart, DoorDash, they're all considered self-employment. So you need to make sure that you list all sources of income. And you could just be, you know, you work for yourself as a bookkeeper or something and everything is W-2, 1099. So any 1099s you get, that's automatically self-employment and that should be included on that form. If you have separate business accounts for your business, we'll need copies of those. Or savings accounts, we'll need copies of those. And you do need to provide the last 3 years of federal income tax returns for the business. If it's part of your personal account, we will need the last three federal income tax returns. That's for Spectrum. And again, if you're self-employed, there is a form at the back of this packet that you need to complete and return with your application. Now, we're going to know if you're self-employed by looking at your federal income tax return. And if you're not self-employed, at minimum, you need to provide your 2021 federal income tax returns and your 2021 W-2s and or 1099 forms. So we look at your federal income tax return, obviously for your income. So we'll check the, you know, adjusted income at the top of the 1040 to make sure we have all W-2s. So all the W-2s should add up to what the dollar amount is on the first line of your tax return. So we look at that. We look if you're getting Social Security, you're getting, if you're self-employed, you have interest and dividend money, you're receiving investment accounts, pension. We can find all that out from your taxes. So if you own a home, we can find that out on your tax return. So that's why you need to provide every page that you submit to the IRS. Don't just send me the cover page of your 1040. That is not every page that is submitted to the IRS. So we need every page. If you did not file tax returns in 2021, and that includes anyone on Social Security, anybody who did not file taxes in 2021, they need to provide a letter from the IRS. It's called verification of non-filing from the IRS. If you did not file, you can get that. IRS has just started or updated their website where you can create a username and password and log in. And then you can print out the verification of non-filing after you navigate the website. If you're unable to do that, you can go on to the irs.gov, same website, print out form 4506-T and fill it out and submit it to the IRS. They give you a fax number you can fax it to, or you can mail it in. And that form, you need to go through it and read it carefully. You can use that form for multiple reasons. One, if you want to get a copy of your tax transcript, meaning you can't find your 2021 federal income tax returns, you can get a transcript of that return. You can get, if you can't find your W-2s or 1099s, you can get a transcript of your W-2s or 1099. If you didn't file your taxes, you can get the verification of non-filing. It's kind of a cramped form. So read each line carefully. But the IRS will send you all those. There's no charge to request a transcript. If you request actual copies of your tax return, they will charge you. And we're not requiring you do that. You just need to provide a transcript is more than acceptable. All right. Any questions on federal tax returns or 1099s and W-2s? Guys are an easy group. Oh, I have a question. My daughter is 18, is a full-time student. She would be a co-applicant, so she would need to sign the application. She is a dependent, but she's an adult. So even though she's a full-time student, she's still, if she's working, she needs to provide information. It could be just information from past summer job, if she's not working now while she's going through school. Not working. Okay. Did she work in the summer? Yes. And so I expect she'll be working next summer as well. Is she a dependent on your tax return? No. Okay. So her income will count. We'll try to figure out what her income will be, because her income will count towards your income, towards the household income eligibility for the property. All right, so we will need to know what she earned last summer, and we'll take last summer's income and base it on what she's going to earn this coming summer, which may not be accurate, but it's the best we can do at this point in time. Does that make sense? Okay, all right, so the next step, this is very, 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 very important, is your asset statements. So we're going to talk about your checking account and the savings account. We look at them both the same. You need to provide the last three bank statements for all checking, savings, money market accounts. All right. We look at them closely with a fine tooth comb, particularly the deposits. So every bank pay stub, we're going to match on your bank statement. If you get, well, that this is where we'll find out if you have Social Security, child support, unemployment, you get regular income from Fidelity or wherever your income's coming, we're going to see it on your bank statement. So for the information, pay stubs, return to a store of something, a credit, Social Security, we know where that money came from. You've already provided us with the backup documentation to prove that. What you need to pay attention to, A, to make sure we have all that backup documentation from your sources of income, but we also need to know those ATM deposits, the counter credits, a check deposit, a mobile deposit, Venmos, if there's a ton of Venmos, there's a ton of Cash Apps. You need to identify where that money came from. So a Venmo could be for, you know, $20. It's a friend of yours reimbursing you for a round of drinks. That's okay. You need to write directly on that bank statement where that money came from. Okay. Failure to do that, and we're going to add up all those unexplained deposits over the course of 3 months. We're going to add them up, average them, and then multiply by 12, and that dollar amount will be added to your income. And I guarantee you, some of that means is going to mean you're over income. It's just the way it works out. So you certainly would have the opportunity to provide, you'll be determined ineligible, and you'll certainly have the opportunity to update in your information, but you will have lost the opportunity to be included in the lottery. So you really want to pay attention to that. We used to just, you know, boohoo the Venmos, but people are getting paid by Venmo right now. They're getting paid on PayPal. That's where their paycheck is coming in. So you really need to identify it. And some of the dollar amounts we see in Venmo and PayPal, it can look like you're getting paid or you have another job. If you have a ton of Cash Apps, you do need to provide where that money's coming from. It's best if you go in, well, not best, you need to go in and print out the last statement for Venmo, print out the last statement for PayPal, your Cash App, all those new techie things that I can't keep up with. You do need to provide the last statement, because any balances in those accounts are counted towards your asset limit. But more importantly, if we don't know where that money came from, if it's not a direct deposit, we match transfers between accounts. So if you have money going between your checking and savings account, we're going to match up those account numbers We're going to match up the transfers. So you really, you need to understand, you need to identify those deposits. We don't know where they came from. If you don't, I guarantee you it could not work. It may not work in your favor. Do not send us a running transaction list of 3 months of transactions. We won't accept it. We want the actual bank statements. If you're not getting your bank statements in the mail anymore, you can log on to your bank account and print out the e-statements. Or you can go into your bank and ask them to print out the last three statements. If you do that, they may charge you for those statements. So you can get it at no charge if you do it at home on your computer, or if you get the bank statements mailed to you. But it's really, really important to pay attention to those deposits. We look at how you spend your money as well, not nearly as closely. I kind of go down that list and I'm looking for transfers again, if there's any new accounts. I'm looking for the Robinhoods, the Coinbase. I'm looking for any other financial accounts you may have that you may to match up what you've provided us, or maybe you've neglected to provide us those statements. So we do look at how you spend your money, but we don't look at it real carefully. So I don't know how much you spend on coffee a month. I don't care, but I do care for if I see the Robinhoods, Coinbase, or whatever. I have a few more questions. Oh, one for you, Jen or Austin. What is the current market rent?
So our two bedrooms range from $2,750 and our three bedrooms are $3,100.
Okay. So the affordable rents, they are not fixed. They will be adjusted on an annual basis. I should have mentioned that. So that's a really good question. The rents are based on the HUD income limits. HUD releases new income limits usually every April, which is when we go through a crazy time in our office updating all the rents. So on an annual basis, they are adjusted. We get new income limits and we get the new utility allowance, because there is a utility allowance, the Section 8 utility allowance for the town of Grafton or Worcester. I forget which one we used. The utility allowance schedule is deducted before we get to the final rent. So the affordable rent is actually usually quite higher than what you're being charged, because a utility allowance has been deducted for electric and water and sewer for this property. So I will tell you right now, the rents won't change for this property because we're advertising all 10 units. So even if you go into the later unit at the end of the year, the rent will be the same. So there won't be any changes, but if the income limit has adjusted, we will use the new income limits, but the rent will stay the same because all units have been marketed at this amount. So yes, and welcome back to the Northeast from the Southeast, best part of the country. The question is, would a current full-time job out of the area disqualify me? Unless you're going to be working remotely, yes, because we need to determine your eligibility based on the income you're going to be earning when you move to the Northeast. So if your job is remote, we will use that money. But if you're going to have to quit your job and find another job, we will need to know what your new job is and your new salary is, because we can't qualify you based on your old job when that money will go away or that income will go away when you move back to the Northeast. Best part of the country. Good decision. All right. If you have a debit card, okay, a debit card it is not the ATM card that's attached to your checking account. That's not the debit card I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is if you have a Direct Express card where you're getting your Social Security, if you have a Visa card and your paycheck is going on a Visa card, that's a debit card, any multiple arrangements of any of those cards, those are debit cards. You get money directly put on that account. If you get child support through the DOR, it may be on a debit card. If you get, I know if you have SNAP benefits, it's on a debit card, but we don't count SNAP benefits in determining your eligibility. We don't count the income from that. So any source of income that goes on a debit card, you need to provide the last statement of the debit card. Okay. Now, one thing I forgot to mention, and it's not written in here, if people get SSI from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, or they get money from the Massachusetts Department of Transitional Assistance, there is a letter that they send you, similar to the Social Security letter, that tells us what your benefits are. So you need to send us those letters. Those are for like the $114.90 or $30.40 a month. We need the backup documentation for that. We'll see that as a deposit in your account, but we do need the backup documentation as well. Okay, got to mention that. All right, any questions on checking account, savings accounts? Oh. Well, the comment is, I will get a new job. I will get new job local to Grafton. I won't quit my current job until I would get selected for housing. Well, you're kind of in a catch 22 because we're not going to approve you without having a job in Grafton. Okay. Because I don't know where you are, but again, it's the minimum income. If you're not making the minimum income wherever in the Southeast, and the income limits are out there, you're getting paid more in the Northeast, we're not going to know that. So we can't approve you without having the new job information, unless there's another way you want us to do it, Jennifer.
I just had a question in regards to that. What if someone has a new offer letter for future employment?
Offer letters that would are fine. Work. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if you look for a job and have an offer letter, we will accept that. Along with a letter from your old company. Well, not if you haven't given your notice yet. We won't ask for anything from your old company because we don't want you to lose your job. But we will accept an offer letter. Good point, Jennifer. Thank you. All right. You need to provide the last statements for Venmo, PayPal, Cash App, Square Inc., whatever those sorts of techie things that I can't keep track of. If you have a revocable trust, you need to provide a copy of the trust document. If you have equity in rental or other capital investments, you need to provide documentation of those. If you have investment accounts, stocks, bonds, treasury bills, CDs, mutual funds, money market, Robinhood, and all other online accounts, we need just your last statement. We don't need the last three. We need your last current statement. Now, I understand a lot of those are just provided on a quarterly basis. That is okay. If you apply before the new quarter comes out, that is okay. The deadline, what did I say, is December 30th? Yes. So the new quarterly statement isn't going to be out. So the statement you're going to provide to us is your September 30 statement, and we are okay with that. Now, before it goes to Spectrum, we may ask for the new one, but to be included in the lottery, a quarterly statement, which I know the last quarterlies were out in September 30th, we're good with that, okay? So don't worry too much about that. All right, if you have retirement accounts, IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401k, 403b, KEO accounts, pensions, whatever you have for both your current and past employment, you need to provide those statements. Now, IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, we're going to look at those. We may look at those. Well, let's start with the IRAs. So with an IRA, the value of that account will count towards your asset limit, but we will deduct taxes, both federal and state, and if you are under age 59 and a half, we will deduct a 10% penalty. So whatever the balance is after we deduct that dollar amount is what will count towards your asset limit. Roth IRAs will count the full value because you don't pay taxes on those. If you have a 401k from a previous job that you're no longer with and you haven't rolled it over into anything, the value of that account also counts towards your asset limit. But again, we will deduct any taxes and penalties you may have to pay if you were to liquidate that account. If you have a current 401k, you may or may not be able to withdraw any money from that account. If you're able to take an in-service withdrawal, then that's where you can withdraw funds and not have to pay it back. You still have to pay taxes on that money that you're withdrawing, but you do not have to pay that money back into your 401k account. That dollar amount for the in-service withdrawal, we will count towards your asset limit, again, deducting taxes and penalties if any apply. If you do not have access to your 401k at all, or if you can only take a loan out on your 401k, then we're not gonna count the value of that account at all towards your asset limit, all right? If you're able to take a hardship, we're not gonna count it because you're not buying a house. So if you can take an in-service withdrawal from that account, we will count that towards the asset limit. If you can't, if you don't have any access or only able to take a loan out on that account, then we're not gonna count that 401k at all. Same applies for KEO account and a 403b. There are circumstances you can withdraw while you're still working for the company, and we will take that under consideration if we are able. I know for a fact if you work for the state or you work for a local city or town or teacher, you don't have any access to your retirement accounts while you were still working in those positions. So we know none of that counts towards the asset limit. There's no limit here, but we'll count towards your assets. But we would need documentation from whoever manages your 401k that states you do not have access to those funds. Unfortunately, we can't take your word for it, mainly because we have to send it to Spectrum. So we need to have all the backup documentation to go with everything. All right, if you have, and all those accounts apply for current and past employers, so remember that. I've got some more questions. This is for Jennifer and Austin. Do any apartments have exterior doors, example, a porch? And can, Austin, can you provide your contact information so someone can contact you to arrange a tour?
Yeah, definitely. I can put my contact information in the chat, and we do not have porches.
No porches. Okay.
No porches.
All right. Back to assets. If you have a whole life or universal life insurance policy, there is a cash value to those accounts. The cash value of those accounts will be counted towards your asset limit. If you have a term life policy or your life insurance policy is with your company, then there is no cash value to those accounts. Term life, no cash value. And obviously, if you no longer work for your company, that life insurance will go away as well. So it's only if you're paying a monthly bill or annual bill for your own private life insurance. If there is a cash value, that counts towards your assets. And if you receive lump sum receipts or one-time receipts like lottery winnings or an insurance payout, or anything like that, that is counted as an asset. It is not counted as income, all right? So you don't have to worry about that putting you over income. Now, I've already talked about Austin's phone number has been posted. I'll read it out. It's 508-827-8787. I've talked about the students, so full-time, a student working and dependent of on your tax return, we will only count $480 of her income towards the household eligibility. If they are a full-time student or a part-time student and are not dependent on your tax returns, then their income will count towards your household income eligibility. There is a student status affidavit. I've already mentioned that you must complete even if there are no students in the home. Austin has just added, you can call or text that number anytime and he will respond. So clearly it's your cell phone. So that's the best way to get in touch with Austin. I've already mentioned if you are pregnant, that unborn child is counted as a household member. You just need to provide documentation from your doctor that you are in fact pregnant. I've already talked about if you're in the process of a divorce or you're separated, you need to provide documentation on how the assets are being distributed, child support, if there's a home to sell, you know, how, what's going to happen, your equity. So we need that information. If you're unable to provide it, then your soon-to-be ex-partner or spouse income and assets will count towards your income eligibility for renting an affordable unit at Prentice Place. And then finally, if you own a home or a rental property, you need to provide a copy of your market analysis, meaning if you were to sell the property, how much would you sell it for, and your last mortgage statement. I'm not sure, there's a form, there's always a form, that we fill out, but there may be a form that you fill out, and I bet you anything I didn't include it in here. Because if you have a rental property, you obviously have expenses for that rental property, maintenance, taxes, insurance. That's taken into consideration when we determine your income from that property. And I don't think I did not include that form. So it's another form you'll have to complete. You will not be penalized because I didn't include the form. That's not going to disqualify you. But it will be a form that we'll send you that you will have to complete at some point. All right. So that's all the main documentation everybody has to provide if it meets with you. But the other forms that you only need to provide if it is applicable to you is a certification of zero income, the child and custody support affidavit you need if you have children, more than one child. You need to complete this form for each child, whether or not you receive child support. Okay, so it has to be completed for each. Gift income, if someone is gifting you money on a monthly basis, that will count towards your income, and that will count towards the minimum income needed for you to qualify for that apartment. So whoever is providing you with the gift income, they need to complete this form, not you. Trust me, don't do it. We'll just have to send it back and have someone else do it. And this is all Spectrum. Again, great people, but they have rules they have to follow. Same as I have rules I have to follow, they have rules. So if you were self-employed, there's a self-employed income affidavit. If you are a waitress or in a job you are earning tips, waiter or waitress, in a job you are getting tips, you need to fill out the tip and gratuity income affidavit. There's the unemployed status affidavit, complete if you're unemployed or not working. School employee affidavit, this is really important to us. If you work for a school, and you're not working in the summer and you're not getting paid in the summer, then we need to know if you're getting another job in the summer. So that's what this form is for. If you are a seasonal worker, landscaper, you may not be working right now because you're a seasonal worker. We need to know if you're getting unemployment benefits and all that kind of information. And that's it. That's it. I feel like I have talked for an hour and a half straight.
So that's it. That's all.
Does anybody have any questions? Val, you're the only one that would have a question. Nope. Okay. So I think we're done. Again, this is recorded. This will be posted on our website tomorrow or Monday. Sometimes it takes a little while for Dropbox to get to my computer in my office. But when it does arrive, it will be posted on our website right under our listing for Prentice Place in Grafton. So if you need to listen to it again, you're more than welcome to. Our job is to work with you to make sure you understand the process. If you have questions on the process, that's what we're here for. So please, you can talk to myself or Jennifer. So our office number is 978-456-8388. Please call us at any time. That's what we're there for. I will be out of the office, on vacation between the week between Christmas and New Year's. Jennifer will be there. So she can answer any questions you have. So I'm hoping I'll get to work with you and moving into Prentice Place. So if there's no other questions, I'm gonna say good night. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, Maureen.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye, Austin. See you tomorrow.
I'll see ya.